Welcome to the PA Podcast. We had the pleasure to talk with Aaron Campbell and Bob Obst. Well, you will be the judge. It was a funny time with some funny comedians. It gets real and honest, a great talk, and some great guys. So enjoy.
Oh, there's BK and Aaron.
Aaron.
BK, Aaron.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
How you doing, my friend?
Not too bad. I'm sitting here with Bob.
He got the chair.
How you doing, Bob?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad you joined us.
Thank you for having me.
How's the audio coming through?
Not bad.
Sounds like my last physical. How'd I do? Not bad.
No, you're sort of okay.
Yeah, there's a little bit of an echo because you're using a microphone and not a headset, but it's not too bad.
Oh, we have a microphone?
Yeah.
I knew there was something missing.
Yeah, the headsets make it kind of more isolated, but that's cool. We can hear you.
Hey, he stole the good chair. What am I talking about? I only live here.
Well, take that up with Aaron, you know.
Yeah, they were having a knockdown drag out before you called.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. So I understand we're short, what, Mark Bonto tonight?
Yeah, he
couldn't make it.
He couldn't make it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I never liked that fucker.
Now we can talk about him.
I'm pretty sure he's Jewish.
Well, there's two of us here?
Well, I brought Bob into it so we could increase the Jewish population in this conversation by
100%.
And I appreciate that, Aaron. I do. It's, we like to be a fair and balanced podcast. So
do you guys have any protocol on your podcast as far as language, material?
Nah. Fuck no.
Fuck no? Okay.
No, just be yourselves. How's that?
Well, I got to get the webcam going, but.
We don't do the webcam.
I got a microphone, but I got a webcam.
Uh-oh. I think that would say show too much. No, we're audio only, guys. And because the bandwidth, you know. It's just
The video just eats up too much and it degrades the quality of the call.
It's kind of cut. Yeah. Yeah, we're not a big we're not Adam Carolla, you know.
Adam who?
Adam, I don't know. Yeah, Adam C., I think his name was. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The guy who made Jimmy Kimmel.
Exactly.
Jimmy who?
So, dudes.
He's to bed at 9:30. He can't stay up late to see these guys.
Yeah, I turn into a pickle at 9:30.
Yeah. That's what I understand.
Yeah, we got that, noted. So, we'll take care of that, so. So, dudes, so great for you to join us. I appreciate that.
Oh, we're happy to be here.
Yeah. You know, and, we love comedians. And I personally love all comedians, you know, starters and, you know, veterans. And I just think it's great about the stories of how they got into it. And tell us why you chose to be a comedian.
I lost a bet back in 2000.
Okay.
Well, I used to love to go to the comedy show. Back in the day, there was a place in Grand Blanc called Russo's Comedy Club. Mm-hmm. And that, it was a real big comedy scene back then. And I would drag my friends up there every Friday night for the show. And about 10 years ago, they announced to the crowd that they were going to do an open mic where somebody brand new could get up between the opener and the headliner and do 3 minutes. And I had just enough liquor in me to raise my hand. And, Yeah, so, and they said, yeah, you know, come back in 2 weeks and we'll throw you up there. So I spent 2 weeks in sheer terror trying to come
I
up with
bet.
three minutes of material.
Oh, wow.
Back, and I was, of course, I was filthy. You know, every new comic is always just incredibly filthy. I did jokes. I think one of my opening jokes was, never go down on your girlfriend first thing in the morning because it's like trying to open up a grilled cheese sandwich.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, no, I was total hack. I think I followed that up with the reason there's a mushroom on the end of a man's penis is when he whacks off, his hand doesn't come loose and he doesn't punch himself in the face.
Oh, my God.
But it was absolutely filthy. It was disgustingly filthy. But I got lucky, and it was a college crowd, and the headliner that night was Chrissy Burns, who was a real big name in comedy until she passed away a couple years ago. And she came up to me after the show, and she says, one, you're filthy. That was disgusting. And two, she says, but, you know, you should stick with it. And she kind of took me under her wing, and, you know, 12 years later, here I am.
Wow.
I know, not a funny story.
You know, but it's your start. That's,
it's
you know,
your
that's
story,
how you got
dude.
Started.
Yeah.
No, we had a great time as roommates because she was a working comic back then.
Yeah.
And I remember we'd sit around and come up with material, and we were talking one night, just joking around, and she had just moved to Ypsilanti, and I'd just become a roommate. And she had to go find a gynecologist. And I said, well, what kind of guy, you know, what do you look for in a gynecologist? And she says, someone really old because they have the shakes.
Nice.
And she ended up making that part of her set, and I said, I can't wait until I turn 40. I'm gonna kind of spin that around, where, because, you know, when guys turn 40, you know, Brian, oh, yeah, what happens when you turn 40 and you get a checkup? yeah, the doctor throws new maneuver in that little procedure.
Yeah, it gets a little personal.
Like, it's very personal. Like, he's digging around for 7-year-old. I don't know what he's looking for.
Looking for gold, I think. I don't know.
well, that'd be impressive if he found it. I wouldn't be doing comedy if I could pack gold down there. But I remember telling Chrissy I couldn't wait until I turned 40 because I could spin that joke and say the one thing I don't like about my doctor is his Parkinson's.
Nice.
Very good.
She made a hell of a gynecologist. Am I right, Jennifer?
I'm sorry?
He would have made a hell of a gynecologist, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, find yourself a gynecologist with Parkinson's. You can't wait to see the guy.
Yeah, he's got a line going out the door, man.
With one random gay guy in line for some odd reason.
It happens. It happens. Oh, jeez. That's
so, yeah, so I got Bob Opes with me here tonight.
Hey,
yeah.
Bob.
How you doing, Bob?
Doing good.
What's your story, dude?
It was either learn comedy or do community service work.
Okay.
He's gotten really good at community service work.
Yes. Very good at working in libraries.
Sounds like a plan.
I just didn't want to get to the age where it would have been coulda, woulda, shoulda. Gee, I wish I would have done that. So 2 years ago, I decided to take a comedy class at Joey's.
Yeah.
And Bill Bouchard was the teacher. Very, very funny person. Very nice guy. Sits me on stage, hands me the mic, and we start talking. And he goes, well, I guess we don't have to get you over a fear of the mic. I said, no, not at all. And it just evolved from there. And it's something that, you know, I love doing. I have fun doing it. If the crowd laughs, great. If they don't, great too. I just like being up there doing my thing.
Wow.
I like to give Bob shit because he'll say, yeah. When I first started, I took a comedy class from Bill Bouchard. I went, oh, Bill Bouchard, the guy I did the Holly Hotel with last month? Yeah, I know him.
Nice.
I just don't want to know what they did at the Holly Hotel.
It was magical.
But so I just been doing it for almost, you know, open mics for 2 years and having a blast at it.
Wow, 2 years.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of fun hanging out with Bob. you know, because he tends to, you know, I'm 12 years in and I'm kind of set my ways.
Yeah.
And he throws out a new perspective that I kind of forgot about a long time ago. He you know, so we'll sit down together. It's amazing how fast we come up on material because he reminds me that, it, you know, you got to think differently. I don't know. It's hard to explain. It's just you get so used to your own thinking patterns.
Right. But right. Yeah.
It's always nice to have somebody kind of throw a new spin on it.
So how's that the process work? You guys write jokes together or?
Well, Bob starts out really filthy.
Okay.
New guy.
And then I try to make it I try to refine it just a hair. We were sitting here the other. I'll give you an example. We're sitting here the other night, and I was my last girlfriend was black, and that's true. I'm not gonna go racial here on you. And we were joking.
I will.
Bob. And I was talking about our 1 year anniversary coming up, and he was more than happy to remind me that the traditional 1 year anniversary gift is cotton.
Oh, no.
So, you know, he's off and running with cotton, and you know you should buy her some white sheets. Don't cut holes in them; they don't like that.
Oh, good Lord!
I never would have came up with that because I like to be rehired at clubs. And here's what really sucks about that. I was convinced it was a terrible joke and I was never going to do it. And I was doing a show Monday and I had just enough beers in me to say, fuck it. Let's see what happens. And it was the biggest laugh of the night. It was in Taylor. Keep that in mind.
Okay.
It was downriver Detroit. So they were okay with that, but no, it's fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun hanging out, you know, living with another comic and tossing those things back around.
That
sounds very cool. Sounds very cool.
Do you notice that in different towns, you kind of almost have to use a little bit different material, maybe be a little bit more blue in, you know, certain areas?
Oh, absolutely. Holy cow. That's the first thing I have to look into when I'm in a new town is, you know, what works in Ann Arbor won't work in Flint. What works in Flint won't work in Knoxville, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. A working comic that has 30 minutes of material probably has more like an hour and a half.
Uh-huh.
I can go into, you know, I do this one bit where I'm not going to go deep into it, but a friend of mine asked me what I would do if I won the lotto. And I would say, just to prove myself as a libertarian and a normal person, if I won the lotto, I'd probably buy a plantation in the South and then hire LeVar Burton to come over every other Sunday to reenact the role of Kunta Kinte because I like the arts.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Now, that bit doesn't go over so hot in Flint. But in Ann Arbor, they love it.
Wow, that's great.
Now, how much traveling do you do, say, in the course of like 2 or 3 months? Do you stay kind of like local, or do you do a lot of traveling?
Yeah, it's up and down. Next weekend I'll be in Sturgis, Michigan, which is about a 2.5-hour trip from here, where they put you up in a hotel. I think the weekend after that I'll be in Flint, but then I think the weekend after that I'm one of my booking agents has me, I think, heading out towards, like, Pennsylvania.
Oh, my neck of the woods.
Yeah, so it's really all over the place. We tend to get booked more around where we live just because the venues don't really want to. The industry's changed, you know. What comedians make now is really no more than they made 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah.
Sad.
It is. You know, it's what's happening to the industry is really, really bad. And all it does is it hurts the art because, you know, I get booked a lot in this area just because I'm from the area, and then people see me all the time, and you can't blame them for wanting to say, you know, how about something new? How about something different? Whereas, you know, 20 years ago when, you know, Mark Ridley was really changing the landscape of comedy, it wasn't uncommon to see a headliner or even an opener out of, you know, Florida or Houston. You just don't see it anymore.
Hmm.
Wow.
So have you, you know, kind of brushed up on your Amish jokes for Pennsylvania?
Amish? No,
that shit only goes over in Lancaster County, man.
Yeah, no, it's like, I don't know, it's like writing a Honey Boo Boo joke. It's there's a definitive time stamp on how long that's good for.
About 30 seconds.
That's about 30 seconds, right? No, I try not to make fun of the Amish.
Why? They'll never know.
They'll never hear it.
Yeah. Well, I'm afraid they might have the radio on, or, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I try to stay away from political areas. I don't do any religious or political. I don't know. I'm just one of these people, you know, every time I'm standing in front of a crowd, the thought dawns on me that if they weren't there, I wouldn't have a job.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So you don't want to piss anybody off.
I don't want to piss anybody off. And I'm a wimp. Actually, that's what it is. I'm a pussy. I just don't want to get beaten up.
Oh, well, hey, Bob, did you used to play in bands before you were a comedian?
No.
All right, next question. What do you got?
Come on, Bob.
This guy's good. He's interviewed a lot of times.
Yeah, you can see that here. But since he's going to Pennsylvania, you did give me an onset to start working on some Amish jokes for him.
God, go.
The nice thing is that I'm Jewish.
That's nice.
Hey, well, yeah, it is nice.
I live with you. That's not nice.
Well, hey, it can be. There's 8 days of Hanukkah. You voted for one day of Christmas.
If there's food in the house and there's salt on it, he won't let me eat it.
He won't let you eat it?
Yeah, if there's salt on it, I don't know, kosher or something like that.
And we can't even play football anymore because I can't let him touch the pigskin. I am making fun of my religion. And I got challenged last year to come up with 7 minutes of Holocaust jokes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, here we go. Okay, I'm going to take a bathroom break. And, I'll be back in 5 minutes.
I angst about it for a little bit, and then I came up with them anyway. But everybody loved them, and it was really tough. It wouldn't go well in West Bloomfield, and I definitely wouldn't do it in Skokie, Illinois. But here, you can get away with it.
Okay, go for it.
He told me one the other night, and I swear to God, a synagogue just burst into flames in West Bloomfield.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Hey, Bob, how do you say fuck you in Jewish?
Trust me. Exactly. Okay, what is this? Everybody's stealing my third act?
Well, they're 1 minute of a set.
My girlfriend totally sick this week. Took her to a show I did in Lansing, in Connections. She never heard my material. Never. I've never even done anything funny in front of her except
sex. It's hilarious. Yeah. You should see it.
And
I'll check YouTube.
Part of my opening, part of my opening stick is after a few jokes and I get a few laughs, I go, hey, listen, you guys are really a nice crowd. And I want to let you in on a little secret that, you know, technically we're not allowed to say being Jewish is that, do you know how to say fuck you in Jewish? And she screams out at the top of her lungs, trust me.
And that's great.
I said, folks, isn't it nice? There are now two Jews in the room. And she just sunk under the table. This has been a year, and she's still apologizing for it.
This is Bob's traumatic story for the night. There's no happy ending to this.
Oh, we'll be looking for a new roommate tomorrow.
Sorry, Aaron.
Now my Bob's story ended sad.
We meant well.
A brand new couch.
Well, someone has to keep it happy. That story was longer than their plan to pull out of Iraq.
only have one weapon of mass destruction.
I know, it's hilarious.
Oh my God.
How did you guys get into this the PA podcast? What's the origins there?
After talk of an orgy.
Yeah.
DK, go ahead.
I'm guessing this was a Barstool idea.
Well, basically, except for I live in San Diego, Tag lives in Florida, and Jenny lives in Pennsylvania. But yeah, most of it began basically in the wee hours of the morning, drunk, discussing things. Tag saying, you know, first he's like, hey, we should start a group, which was Pokeholics Anonymous. And then we started two other groups, but I was like, what's a group? Next thing you know, he's like, we should do a podcast. And I'm like, what's a podcast? You know, and here I am. So I don't know how I got roped into all this crap.
Well, here's the million dollar question.
He's still drunk. He still doesn't know what's going on.
How many of the Brians have seen your tits?
None of these Brians have seen my tits.
That's up to Michael.
That's my husband, yeah.
Her husband, yes.
I'm married. I don't do that sort of thing on here for free.
She throws in for free at the end. I don't do that kind of thing. Well, you know, for free.
That knocks out the Jewishness.
Bob's out.
Yeah, sorry. Where in San Diego do you live?
Del Mar area.
Oh, my God. Hoity-toity.
Yeah. You know, it's not the hoity-toityest part of Del Mar, but it's pretty nice. Not bad.
I did 4 years in Scripps Ranch.
Ah, that's beautiful. That's a hoity-toity part of town.
I wasn't trying to show you.
Not a problem.
I don't know if you guys got a chance to talk with Mark Bounce or not, but I don't know if he mentioned that I'm a fledgling novelist now.
Oh, really?
No, I don't think he said that. Go, yeah. Tell us about that.
He was keeping secrets on you.
Tell us about that. Jen's a writer too.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I'm an amateur. I haven't written anything published. I was working on something for November's National Novel Writing Month, and then I took a header off the porch and was on pain medication for most of the month, so nothing good got written.
Actually, I think the good stuff got written when she's on the medication.
I was going to make a political joke there, but I won't.
Did you share the medication?
Hell
always.
No.
So Aaron, what's your book?
I was inspired by my ex-girlfriend. She was big into that 50 Shades of Grey.
Okay.
Which, I mean, let's call it what it is. It's highbrow porn.
It's woman porn. That's all it is.
It's totally woman porn. She would, you know, she'd read a chapter of that on her Kindle, and then her Kindle would smell like 50 cans of tuna.
Oh.
And I,
excellent.
And what I noticed was that, you know, she was in her 30s, and women in their 30s and 40s read it, but they really don't have a book like that written targeting the elderly of America, mm-hmm. which I think is a shame. We don't take care of our elderly enough. So I started writing my own highbrow porn for the elderly. And the working title is 50 Shades of Gray Hair.
Very nice.
And I came prepared here tonight. I brought a quick excerpt from me.
Okay.
If you don't mind, I'd like to read a little bit to you.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Okay, here we go. 50 Shades of Gray Hair, Chapter 1. Jack wondered why Mildred took out her dentures. Later, he could not thank her enough.
Oh, I'm liking it. I'm liking it already.
I know, some deep shit, right?
Yeah, very deep.
Jack fondled her nipples as he worked his way up her calves. Using her...
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
Go ahead.
Fondled her nipples as he worked his way up her calves, using her stretch marks as a roadmap. Jack was sure to grasp her nipples as hard as possible because the years of rug burns had left them desensitized and looking like a pair of split tennis balls. Didn't blame Mildred for not wearing bras anymore. The last time he saw Mildred put one on, it looked like a butcher pouring ground beef into a pair of Ziploc bags.
Oh, Jesus.
I know, this is classy shit, right?
Oh, spicy.
I love it.
The sounds in the room were intense. Jack's respirator, Milter's oxygen tank, the buzzing noise coming from the bed as the motor raised and lowered it. As they kissed, their hearing aids got too close. The high-pitched squealing of the feedback was too much for their poodle, Mr. Gutbucket, and he had a seizure.
Oh.
I know, that was a sad paragraph.
Oh, no.
Mildred realized they had nothing to lubricate their love other than a can of Pledge. She figured since it was designed to clean the dust from antiques, it should work.
I see this skyrocketing right up to the bestsellers list.
Oh, this has Amazon written all over it.
Top 10. All
right. They began making love. The lack of lubricant made it sound like an armpit farting contest. Jack worried he may not be able to bring Mildred to climax. The years and years of sex had made it harder and harder to excite her. They were at the point the only way Jack could get Mildred off was to smack her crotch with a shovel.
Oh, jeez.
We're almost done. The pain's almost over.
Keep it coming.
Here we go. All right. The chiming.
That's what Mildred said.
Oh, Bob. Okay. The chiming sound of the shovel hitting Mildred's artificial hip was mesmerizing. Jack found himself tapping it in rhythm to the sounds of Barry White coming from his iPad. The same iPad Mildred had replaced a week earlier because she mistook it for her bathroom scale and found out she weighs $599. So there you go. That's 50 Shades of Gray here.
I'm buying that.
Yeah, I'm telling you. New York Times bestseller.
Exactly.
It's there, man.
Oh, yeah,
I'm feeling that. I mean, if you don't mind, I'm going to take a copy of that and send it up to my grandparents.
Well, I'm hoping the actual one has pictures in it. So.
Oh, no.
Definitely need some pictures.
Yeah, it works out well because once he gets an advance, he's going to join Hair Club for Men.
There you go.
Well, speaking of love lives, you know, how many times have you either of you been married?
Well, I've been married twice. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time with marriage because wives they don't like it when you date.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of frown on things. That sort of behavior.
How many times have you been married, Bob? Twice?
What week is this? I've been married and divorced pleasantly twice. And I thank my lucky stars for both of my exes. Because that is most of my routine is them.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there's always good material there, that's for sure.
Well, I had to change my first ex. Somebody was kind enough to give her a YouTube video I put out there. Mm-hmm. So now, because of the gag order, I had to change her name.
Ah.
Oh, dear.
And for 16 years of marriage, I could never gag her. So all it took was a comedy act.
Oh. We may have lost Jenny on that one.
Oh, Lord.
No, I can't even date anymore. I've gone from can't stay married to can't even date anymore. I think the problem is that I can't turn the comedy part of myself off.
Yeah.
Oh no, I mean even romantic situations, I find myself cracking jokes.
And then they say you can never be serious and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, my last girlfriend, it started going downhill. I remember the first time I saw her naked, I was looking at her just completely naked, and I cover if I'm uncomfortable, I cover it up with humor, and I looked down at her crotch, and I said, you have a bump on that, you should get it looked at.
They always like that.
Yeah, she goes, yeah, you're an idiot, it's called a clit, and I, I heard her wrong, and to this day, whenever I meet somebody named Clint, I want to spin on my middle finger and rub his nose really fast.
Oh, jeez.
And then I nicknamed her I nicknamed her Buck Kim Kardashian.
Okay.
I was looking at her naked body and I said, "Why do you have two vaginas?" And she said, "Well, the other one's called a butthole." And I said, "That's a terrible nickname for it. You should call your butthole Kim Kardashian, because it's oddly brown and something black's getting ready to pop out of it."
Oh, dude. But I'm bump.
Yeah, so anyways, I'm not good at dating. How's that?
Jen, you still on there?
I'm here.
Okay. Jen's pretty, she's pretty open with that stuff.
You guys, how was you guys' Christmas?
Good. 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 It was just, good time off. Enjoyed it.
Do you spent time with family and, you know, my sister's got kids, so.
What'd you guys get Mark Bonto?
A hard time.
Yeah. Well, we put it, you know, we put a ribbon on it.
From what I've heard, that was a big ribbon.
Yeah, we like the Bonto.
But you guys, the thing I don't like about Christmas is I never have enough money to buy presents for my friends. Except I have this one buddy who always has enough money for Christmas presents, and I couldn't figure out where he was getting the money from, and it turns out he was donating to a sperm bank.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I made fun of him until I found out how much they were paying him each time he pumped out one of those knuckle children.
Make some good money there at the old sperm bank.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He was getting $250 a pop.
Really?
Yeah, you know what that means?
No child support payments.
Yeah, I know what that means is when I was in middle school, I had a gym sock under my bed worth like 10 grand.
Investment for your future. Oh, jeez.
So, Bob's sitting next to me.
So, Bob, how was your Hanukkah? Yeah.
Yeah, how about that Hanukkah, Bob?
How about that Hanukkah thing, Bob?
Because I got socks from Aaron here.
I gave him a pair of gym socks.
Gave him some gym socks.
Yeah, they're probably from under his bed from when he was in middle school.
I washed it. There goes 10 grand on the drain.
Yeah, I was trying to get child support out of him.
Hanukkah, one of these days I'll even remember to light candles.
Yeah,
I got to keep, you know, I want to get one of those menorahs that have a light on them. So all I have to do is switch it on instead of having to remember to buy matches.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff when you don't smoke and you got to light a candle. Put them together and everything in Michigan is electric. You know how hard it is to try to start a candle?
Oh, geez.
Luckily, my girlfriend's Catholic. So we went over there and had a really good time. And, trying to put a Star David on top of the Christmas tree, just big discussion followed.
Didn't go over.
We tried to get something unisex, so it was an angel.
Yeah, there you go.
I never even thought about that. So you're Jewish and your girlfriend's Catholic.
Yeah, that's got to be interesting. Tell us about that.
There's bits all over it. So she wants to go to the poker tent and the beer tent, and you just don't want to pay for it.
No. I'm greedy. I get 8 gifts for Hanukkah and then Christmas. That's why the world should celebrate Hanukkah. 8 days of gifts, man.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, I'm for it.
Yeah, but one of them's like a freaking dreidel, though.
Hey, listen, I was a mean dreidel in school, man. I want a lot of money off of that. You know how hard it is to weigh it down to where it always comes up with what you want.
Is it? Dreidels, I don't know. They look like butt plugs to me.
My rabbi, bless his heart, is rolling over in his grave.
Just it looks like an Amish butt plug. I don't know.
See, he's working his material out for Pennsylvania already.
I'm thinking some Jewish Amish chick came up with a dreidel.
Yeah.
That would be nice. A Jewish Amish chick.
I can picture it right now.
Instead of being a Jewish American princess, they're a Jewish Amish princess. The title's already there. We just have to incorporate the Amish.
Jewish Amish prince. Yeah, how would that even work?
Well, it doesn't work as a Jap either.
I'm on it. I'm on
Old bra's killing me.
I did a girl in high school, third date. I pick her up, and she and her mom are looking at wedding invitations, and I go, who's getting married? And she goes, we are. I go, what do you mean, pale face?
Pale face? Face.
I run into her at my 40th high school reunion. Her husband's bald, no teeth, and I'm going, look what you settled for. Pale face. Bald, no teeth, man, works out great. And she was in love with him. I have very limited hair, but a lot more than Aaron.
Yeah. And
4 more payments, I'll have my teeth.
Why do you keep going back to my hair?
There is none. I don't know. You put the old.
Your picture shows that, Aaron.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Some guys.
No, nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with it. You look good with it. Yeah.
Yeah, at least you got a nice, shapely dome, I guess.
Got a good dome, dude.
Yeah.
See, look at that.
See there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some guys can pull it off. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I feel better. I'll stick around for a little bit. I was.
You've gotten head compliments. You should be fine now.
Yeah, this is the most head I've gotten in a long time.
I knew that was coming.
I know, that was a slow pitch.
That was too easy on me.
After this, he's got a sock over it.
What?
I don't know. It was kind of sock.
That sock. Not that sock, right?
Yeah. God, somebody owes me a beer.
So, Bob, being Jewish and all, We recently interviewed a comedian, and he said eventually it got down to, you know, to where there was like a little battle. This was back in the early 80s, to where, you know, people would start, you know, he would go in and be like, who's been on the longest? Who's done the longest show? You know, they'd say, oh, so-and-so did an hour. And he'd be like, I'm going to do an hour and 10 minutes. So, but I figure you, if you're supposed to be doing a half hour, you're only going to give them what, 20, 25 minutes?
That long?
Oh my god.
Oh, jeez, I hear crickets.
Well, whatever.
It seemed funnier in my mind, I guess.
What's the longest set you guys have done?
Bob's sets run long because of his prostate.
In the bald head.
Thank God that's long. I've done 20 minutes to a half hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Respectful.
Yeah. You know, and again, it all depends on the crowd. You know, I don't know about Aaron because he's experienced, and I have no idea what I'm going to do until I actually get to the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And see what kind of crowd we have. Mm-hmm. I was at one downriver, and it was nice being one of the youngest people on the stage because the crowd had to be in their 70s and 80s.
Oh my god.
There you go.
And I the only thing I could think about starting off with, it's nice to see so many people here. I guess you missed the 2-for-1 coupons at Denny's.
How about that, Eisenhower, huh? What a kid.
Yeah. I like Ike.
Yeah. He only read about him in his history books.
Yeah, you know what? You know it's time to wrap it up when they start throwing their hearing aids at you.
Hey, you know, when you're my age and you're looking for a Cougar, I had to go out and buy an SUV to fit the scooter.
Yeah.
Nice. So, hey, what's some of your favorite moments or least favorite, you know, biggest disasters as far as comedy's gone?
Yeah.
Oh.
Biggest disaster would be tonight between 8:30 and 9:05.
Oh, okay.
Well, thank you. Some bitch.
Biggest. I like to talk about the biggest disasters because those are the memorable ones.
Oh yeah.
Go for it.
Oh geez, where do I start? Oh, 5 years ago, I'm in Pennsylvania, on tour with Nathan Kranzel and Keith Field, and we're at this new comedy club, and they got the spotlight turned up so bright you can't see 2 feet in front of you. Yeah, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. You get on stage and the spotlight's on you, and if it's really bright, you can't see the crowd at all.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And I'm 5 minutes into my set, and I had been practicing my comeback zingers for the hecklers, and I was excited to use them. And I heard some lady about two rows back say something, and I didn't quite hear what she said, but I lit into her. Just. I went stock on her. I was like, oh, I could have eaten a bowl of alphabet soup and shat a better hackle than that. And just really laying into her. And the crowd completely turns on me. I'm up there a half hour and the crowd wants me dead. I can't figure out why. I get off stage. Turns out it's a 90-year-old woman celebrating her birthday. And all she said was, we can't hear you.
Oh no!
Club lifetime. I could never go back.
That's what you get for heckling my grandma. The whole family was there.
Yeah. What's up with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I enjoy thinking about crap like that.
You did go out and get a hearing aid later.
Yeah, that's a rough weekend. How about you, Bob?
Mom,
I haven't really had any disasters, because I enjoy myself on stage because nobody else will. And
you got that going for you.
I just, you know, I every time I go, I have fun. If they laugh, they laugh. If they don't, they don't. As long as I'm having fun, that's all that matters. I'm waiting for my first heckler.
So you're still waiting?
Oh, you're a virgin.
Aren't they cute when they're young?
I have the best comeback.
You have the best comeback?
I have the best comeback. If somebody really boos me, I'm just going to look right at them and say, excuse me, sir, are you booing me or calling your wife in from the field?
What if his wife is actually a cow?
Then I'm going to say, how much do you get by the pound for her? God. I actually had one guy, I stopped my set and I looked at him. I said, sir, you know, it's not harder to be funnier than us. It's not nicer, but it's not harder. And the guy stands up off the bar stool and he's 6'8".
Ooh.
And I'm 6'2 and 240. So I've got the mic in my hand. It says two more steps. You hit him in the knee. Everybody comes down. And he came up and shook my hand and said, thank you for giving it to me.
Nah.
And
then
went back and changed clothes.
Nice. Nice. So, I mean, just I'm sure you both had just that overly drunken person in the crowd, though, right? I mean, how annoying can that be when they're just, you know,
like BK.
Yeah.
No.
You guys were at the show with my girlfriend.
Yeah, well, yeah.
The drunken hecklers are actually I do a thing with the drunken hecklers that gets in. I've done this in several shows where drunken hecklers tend to step on when you're going from the feed to the punch, and I started doing this a couple years ago where I'll actually. Them up on the stage, because when they're drunk, they're stupid enough to say yes when I ask them if they want to get up on stage and try to tell a joke.
Right.
And they'll do it, and they'll get up on the stage, and I'll say, tell a joke, and as soon as they start their feed, I'll go back out into the crowd, but as soon as they start their feed, I'll just start screaming random thoughts at them across the whole crowd. Just, you know, elephants are gray! You know, you suck! And then they shut up and pee themselves.
Nice.
Those are the drunken ones are the really easy ones to take care of. It's the half sober hecklers that are the most difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
Because they're not drunk enough to just be random. They're sober enough. They're drunk enough to make an ass of themselves, but they're sober enough to try to have try to make a point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And those are the ones I really like to go after. I had one. I was doing Holly Hotel with Bill Bushart just a couple weeks back. And the lady in the front row was, you know, tipsy enough to keep running her mouth. And I had done a joke about it 20 minutes before about, Tommy Thompson was the MC that night. And he does a bit about meeting a lady and she bragged that she was the manager of a Walmart. And he says, I don't know why you brag about that. That's like bragging you're the mayor of Flint. I don't know why you brag about that. that's one of Tommy Thompson's bits. And while I was doing my set and this lady in the front row wouldn't shut up. So finally I figured, well, I have to acknowledge her and deal with her. She just won't stop. So I said, what's your name? And she says, D, and I did my typical, I said, well, is that short for Deanne or long for duh? And then I said, we do it for a living. And it turns out she was a manager at a Walmart.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, very good. Hey, Aaron, Bob, your writing technique. Explain that. What's your writing technique for comedy?
Because he, yeah.
The writing technique, it starts out with a very offensive idea that I will take to one of the local open mics. And then it's not really a technique, as it's more of just throw a bunch of crap into the fire and see what doesn't combust.
Okay.
There you go.
So, it's kind of like the thing when I was sitting here with Bob a couple weeks back and talking about my ex-girlfriend and the whole 1 year anniversary. It was basically, I thought it was a crude idea, but I figured, but you have to tell a joke in front of a crowd probably 7-8 times before it really evolves into anything.
Sure.
For me anyways, I can't talk for all comics, but I don't think there's really any way you can sit down and write a great joke. You can write a crappy good joke, but it's basically, take the whole thought, go to an open mic, toss it out there, pay attention to what works, go back home, rework it, go back a week later, toss the rework back out there, and you go through this 6 or 7 times, and that's basically, you start out with a vulgar idea and get in front of a crowd.
There you go.
Same for you, Bob?
I know. I wait until the comic dies and then take a stop.
Oh, you're that guy. You're that guy.
I check my brake lines every morning.
Bob, what do you do, dude?
I used to write stuff down and try to come up with ideas, but when you're by yourself and you have nobody to bounce it off of, it's really hard. And the people that I work with time run away from me when they see me coming because they think I'm going to start bouncing stuff off of them.
No, it's because you're Jewish.
That too.
Well, I would too, Bob, but go ahead.
We're used to it. We got kicked out of Portugal.
My name's German, by the way. No, never mind.
Hey, listen, I know both verses of Springtime for Hitler. Don't feel bad. But with Aaron around, we'll just start throwing stuff around. And,
feedback.
For me, anything is fair game.
There you go.
Okay. And then you evolve it into something that you could say to your grandmother.
There you go.
But you have to start. I mean, there's no who says what's right and wrong. I mean, Aaron said it succinctly. What works in Flint won't work in Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. Works in Ann Arbor can't work anywhere else because the people are too stupid.
Oh. please send all letters to Bob Obst.
Oh, this the podcast is not playing in Michigan, by the way. No.
No. But I mean, Ann Arbor is a sophisticated crowd. It's a college crowd. Most of them think they know everything, and they don't.
Sure.
Because you know, everybody knows that Michigan State is better than Michigan. Farmers are always better than city people. But I just say, anything is fair game, and then we work it out. I'm not afraid to say something to start off with. I mean, when we were first discussing Aaron's girlfriend, it's like, you know, I could think of, you know, what, you know, she's Catholic, so the nice thing would be a cross for the anniversary, but just don't burn it on the front lawn.
He's trying to talk me into doing this in front of a crowd. And he's doing it because he's sitting at the recliner with an ice cream sandwich going, do it. They'll love it.
Plus, that's Taylor, you know? Yeah. Downriver.
I try to come up with material, one that's from me because the crowd can see right through you, and two that you can do anywhere. But I think I'm getting lazy these days because I give it a good example of a bit that works in Flint, Michigan, or Detroit that does not work in Ann Arbor.
Okay.
Good news. Whitney Houston's been sober for like 9 months.
Oh, zing.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know why I love that bit, but they don't care for it in Detroit.
Oh, Lord. Can't imagine why.
Oh.
Jeez.
Now, Aaron and Bob, you guys, you do this for your living. You don't have any other kind of work that you do?
No, I actually am legal. I have a real job.
I do not.
Bob's illegal? Aaron's illegal. I'm sorry.
Aaron's illegal. I came across the border in a truck.
I'm illegal. I'm illegal.
Okay. Explain.
So you do this, you know, this is your job. This is what you do.
I'm not very good at it, so I think I'm going to go back to being legal.
Hmm.
It's, well, you know, it's like I said, the industry's changed. 10, 15 years ago, you can make, I mean, there's comics out of the Michigan area that still do well full time as comics. You know, Bill Bouchard's one of them. You have your, you know, Kevin Kramus's and Chili Chalice's that they do it full time. That you know, but they teach comedy workshops. They have a whole thing going. But you know, as far as being a working comic, it's almost impossible to do it anymore, unless. You know, I mean, you know, unless you're internationally touring, but yeah, it's few and far in between. There's, I would say, if you go to a comedy show and you see a working comic up on a stage, 99 out of 100 times, he's got a day job.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's you know, it's sad, but
it is sad. Yeah.
It's the truth. It's, you know, it is what it is.
Comedy is such an art, and such as, you know, it should be respected. So it's sad.
Well,
yeah. Another thing we're seeing over the last couple of years is we're seeing a real influx of new comics that decide, well, if you're not going to book me, I'm going to start my own open mic room. And
really,
in the Michigan area, it's had a real detrimental effect on the, you know, I think on the art form. Because, I mean, any night of the week, there will be three or four open mics, and they're not in comedy clubs. You know, back in the day, it was, you know, you could go to Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle on a Thursday, or, you know, you could do like a Joey's on a Thursday, but now you can go down to the White Rhino pub.
No, it's not even a pub.
You know, watering hole, and they'll have three people sitting at the bar and 10 comics vying for stage time.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it kind of breaks your heart a little bit. Because it's like, you know, who are you performing for? You know, I understand who you're going for here.
Yeah.
It sounds like egos is.
Ego. You nailed it. Yeah. You absolutely nailed it. It's egos, and it's self promotion to the point of nausea.
Yeah.
And I'm never one. You know, I don't enjoy seeing people fail, but. When you see, you know, a lot of these new comics who just won't stop talking about how great they are and you should come out and see them. And then when people do go to see them and they fail, it's like, well, you know, it was going to happen. So there you go. But the real problem is the people that are in the audience leave with a bad taste in their mouth for comedy in general.
Yeah, because there's a craft to it that I don't think just anybody can do. And I have other comedian friends that are on my friends list, and I've said this on my Facebook page, that I would never try to do stand-up because I have not the talent for that craft. And one of my friends, Mike Canestaro, and I don't know if you guys know him, he's a real nice guy. He really appreciated that and said that, you know, a lot of people just go up there and think they can throw out any bullshit they want and that they're hysterically funny, and they can't understand when they die.
Well, I think a lot of the new comics, especially the ones that are at the White Rhino, and we're using that as an example because we've both been there. I myself, I'll follow the adage that you have to earn the right to be dirty.
Yeah.
And they come out with, you know,
shock value. Shock,
you know, yeah, just
shock value.
Shock, no clever. Yeah.
And, you know, and I look at them and says, you got to pay attention to the crowd you're with because that's not going to work everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
But they think, well, you know, everybody gets away with it and I'm going to do it. And I go, you know, you're all wrong. And it just bothers me. You know, if I can't take my family to see these guys, well, first off, I don't have a family. But if I did have one to take them, I wouldn't go. I mean, I've seen Aaron and I would go see his show. I wouldn't pay for it. I'm Jewish. I want to be comped.
I'd buy your way in.
Yeah, I give him a wooden butt plug. He's happy.
Yeah, the one that looks like a dreidel.
Dreidel, yeah.
Give him a dreidel.
Just stick a dreidel to his butt. It'll be fine.
But it's a shame because they're, you know, once the if, you know, people, I've heard people in the audience going, is he done yet?
Yeah. And
you just feel bad, you know, trying to figure out, well, where's that old hook they used in the 30s in burlesque to get them off the stage?
Well, I think the bigger problem is that now you've got all these, you know, little open mics and one-night stands being put on it by amateurs. The problem is that the bigger venues that used to pay the decent money to have a comedy show, these guys, and I've met them and had this conversation, they say, well, why would I pay more money when I've got this kid willing to do it for basically free?
Yeah,
you know, why would I pay that kind of money? And so the sad thing is in the Detroit area alone, you've got your Norm Stoltzes, your Billy Ray Bowers, your Gary Tysons. I mean, guys that have been around forever who are real veterans of the art who are struggling to make a living at something that they shouldn't have to struggle at.
Yeah, exactly.
And so now I'm that jerk when I see a guy that's been doing open mics for a year decide to start his own show at some pub. I want to kick him in the jaw, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, understand.
And I don't feel bad about that at all. That stick a wooden dreidel up his butt. That'll be my new calling card, like the Joker.
Great days.
That'll be my new calling card. They'll find some an alley with a wooden butt plug. They'll up Campbell was here.
CSI so, Detroit.
Dad. Hey, I mean, you know, the only comedian that I really, besides, you know, Mark Bonto being a good friend of ours, I mean, you know, the only Michigan comic that I follow is Mulva the Vulva. What do you think of him?
Ian Mulvaney?
Oh, yeah.
Him and Amber are old friends. Amber Goodness. Yeah, we're old friends. Ian's he's a really neat guy. Is he still going by Mulva the Vulva?
Just in the video that I watched when I was
on YouTube. Yeah, I saw that too.
I had no idea he was still going by Mulva the Vulva. I see the guy all the time. We did a show together at Connections some months back. The thing is, I've known him for so long, I don't pay any attention to a set. Like, I'll say hi to him and talk to him all night long, and as soon as I call him up on stage, I just go back to the bar and just, all right, let me know when you're done.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't, But no, yeah, Ian's been doing it for a while. Yeah, I love the guy, and he's got a great girlfriend, and we've got a lot of history there.
There you go.
Other than that, I think he's a fucker.
Yeah.
Nice. Sumbitch.
No, there's a lot of comics that have been in the area that have stuck it out. You know, I have a lot of respect for, you know, it used to be when I first started comedy, if you just had the balls to get up on a stage, you had my respect.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, it's not so much. If you get up on the stage, that's cool that you got the balls to do that. But now I have a fine appreciation because, you know, when I started, I would say, you know, maybe 10% of the comics that I started with are still around. But they're great comics. You know, I have a lot of respect for. You know, Ian Mulvaney, I respect him. Just, you know, he's been around, he's stuck it out. He's put his time in, and, you know, he's earned his, he's rightfully earned his name.
Stripes.
He's earned his stripes. Yeah, absolutely. And, no one's going to take that away from him. Certainly not me. So it's, we've been friends long enough, to be honest with you. I couldn't tell you a single bit he does. I don't watch his set anymore. I don't feel like I really need to.
Okay, I have a question for you. Is now, when you see a new comic, will you pay more attention to them to see if they've stolen any of your material?
No, I used to, but because of YouTube and just the comics that know each other, if you're stealing bits, I've had this happen to me, I think about three times, where I've been at a show and there's a comic on stage that was word for word doing my material.
Wow.
I didn't have to beat them up after a set because they were taking numbers to do it for me.
Nice.
A good example. I did Gilda's Laugh Fest 2 years ago. I was there with, Steve Pierce, Stu McAllister, and a few other comics. And there was a new comic out of Indiana who got up on stage, and we were sitting there listening to him, and we couldn't figure out what seemed weird. And it dawned on us, he was doing Dave Landau's material word for word.
Wow.
Dave Landau was in New York on tour at the time. And because of technology, we called Dave up on his cell and said, hey, Dave, that's really impressive. You're so good. You're in New York and Grand Rapids.
Exactly. Oh, God.
And, it turns out this guy had done it the day before. So I used to really worry about people stealing my material, but now, I don't even have to be on the same side of the country. And if somebody's doing my material, they're going to get caught, and they'll get called out, and then they don't get booked, and that word gets out about them. So it happens, but it's nothing I really waste any time thinking about.
Yeah, that is amazing. I mean, nowadays, I mean, people in the audience just, you know, with the Twitter and whatnot, I mean, can just, bury a guy like that's, you know, stealing jokes. So that's got to be a good thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's actually a YouTube clip. I can't remember what it's under, but it would cut back and forth between Carlos Mencia and different comics. And it would basically show this one comic do a bit, and then it would cut to Carlos Mencia doing the exact same bit.
Mm.
And then it would go to a different comic, and then Carlos Mencia doing the exact same bit. So, you know, technology, it's got its pros and its cons, but, you know, one of the pros is I don't have to police the comics because technology and social media is doing it for me.
They'll police themselves, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just hope they aren't butchering your jokes, I mean, when it goes out.
at least do it right. At least do it right.
That's my biggest worry is some comic's going to come up to me and go, you know, I stole your set and it sucks.
Or I made it better. It's like,
I do this one bit where I'll walk up to the crowd and say, it's great to be here. I took in the sights today. I saw an ugly pregnant woman. I was like, hey, good for you. And then I got a buddy of mine that says, only you could do that bit. Even I can't do the bit. See, it didn't go over.
Okay, we can edit. Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Come on, let's laugh track this thing.
Don't worry, I got laugh tracks.
Jenny can laugh track it. She can do all sorts of stuff.
3, 2, 1, do it again.
Yeah, don't worry about any mistakes that are in here because Jenny cleans them all up. I mean,
hey, so If it wasn't for that, then How I Met Your Mother would never be on TV.
Is there an applause light that comes on when he talks?
It's my lighter.
I have a friend of mine that does stand up off and on, and he's got a couple of really funny bits. And I called him up and I said, "Do you mind if I use them?" Because I didn't. If he would have said no, I wouldn't have used them. But they're actually, I make them work better than he does.
Cool.
And nice. Now, and I feel sorry for him because he's a nice guy, but he just doesn't deliver it right. And he's even said, "How'd it go?" And I said, "They laughed."
It's about the delivery. Yeah.
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 And, you know, and I think Aaron hit it right. Everybody says, you know, "Oh my God, I can't believe you have the nerve to get on stage and do it." And I go, "There's no nerve to it. You just up there, you're one on one with the audience." You know, I had to deal with it when I was 12 years old in a synagogue getting bar mitzvahed. I mean, there's 750 people laughing at you because you can't ha, you know? So, and it doesn't bother me. You know, I have got a new opening bit that I really want to try. And it's like, you know, they tell me to come out here and picture the audience naked and says, "Lady, I've looked at you. I'm glad you got your clothes on." And I don't know how my girlfriend would like that.
So how's the bed end? No, I'm joking with you.
It always does. A queen size bed and I have 3 inches.
Oh, yeah. Okay, hey, I'll give you guys both a decision. Either give us the most embarrassing thing you've ever done in life, let alone comedy, or tell us the most embarrassing thing you've ever seen Mark Bonto do.
Oh, no.
Screws me, because I've never met Mark. So
really?
The most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me. Did you like it?
Nice.
I did.
But the worst thing is having sex with your girlfriend in the bedroom and having your aunt walk in and slam the door and hit her in the head.
Oh, God.
Mom, why her sister's got this big knot in her head.
Nice.
So what were the options? What one was the most embarrassing thing I've ever seen Mark Bonto do?
Either the stupidest or most obnoxious thing you've ever done, or the stupidest or most, you know, worst thing that you've ever seen Mark Bonto do.
Okay, let's see. The stupidest thing I've ever seen Mark Bonto do. One time I saw Mark do stand-up comedy.
Is that it?
That's it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, snap.
Stupidest thing I've ever done? On stage or just in life?
In life.
Okay. I was in Puerto Rico 5 years ago, and I'd never been there before. And I was taking a taxi to the opposite side of the island. And I don't know if you've been there, but the hills there are incredibly steep. And I was in the taxi, and we were cresting the top of this hill, and as the car got to the top and started to go over the hill, it was like you were looking down at a 60-degree slope. Mm-hmm. And I turned to the taxi driver, and I said, "How in the world do you drive this in the winter?"
Excellent. Excellent.
I wish to God I made that story up.
Oh, Lord.
I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah, I would ask Tag the same, you know, question, but, you know, it would take way too long.
I did have a very embarrassing situation when I lived out in San Diego.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
My first ex and I were, I'm not saying she was really fat, but you can. we were up in Del Mar, over by Jake's.
Okay.
And we were laying on the beach, and these five people came up and started rolling her in.
Yeah, you're too close to Scripps, man. They're on to that stuff, man. They got to roll them back into the water, that's for sure.
You know, and again, it sounds horrible, but being heavy like she was had its dividends. You know, after the divorce, she got a job at SeaWorld being stunt double to Shamu. Oh,
was she the one that bit that diver's leg?
I'm sure that it was probably the middle one. No, actually, after the divorce, she became lesbian.
Oh, that's always a good thing.
Oh, well, I got replaced by a strap-on.
Yeah. So you never let her give you blowjobs, right? I mean, because you just never knew whether or not she wanted to give you a blowjob, but she was just hungry.
You're right.
Oh, jeez.
And we didn't even worry about butt plugs. All we used was Vicks. And...
Should have pulled a dreidel out.
So much for telling my parents about the cast.
Listen, Jen.
We'll send it to you before we post it for your guys' approval. That's for sure.
Oh, for the love of God, I'm begging you, please.
Yeah, just make sure it stays out of Missouri, okay?
Yeah, we will censor the states on this one.
You're just lucky it's not me and Tag doing the editing and that it's Jenny, because
exactly.
Me and Tag would probably cut out just all the good stuff and just leaving all the, you know, rolling my wife into the bay stuff.
With God as my witness, it could have happened.
Okay. Oh, guys.
Oh, jeez.
Guys, this has been... Much fun.
We've had a blast. Thanks for having us on the PA podcast. Appreciate it.
Well, it has been a lot of fun. We're running a little long now, which is okay, because by the time I edit, we'll have 45 good minutes, and you know, we tighten it up and make it look good, and you know, kind of like vaginal surgery.
Oh, you leave that in, Jen. Leave that in.
She doesn't want to do stand up. Come on.
Exactly.
She's running. Yeah, you guys you guys are very funny. And
yeah.
Oh, thank you.
And you should be doing comedy. And we just so appreciate it, and we had so much fun. Laughed our asses off. It's been great. So, you know, just hang in there. I know it's, you know, you got to make your own decisions, do what you got to do. But I think you're both comedians, and I love it.
Well, coming from you, I'll take that as a deep compliment, and I appreciate it. And it was great talking with everyone tonight.
Yeah, let us know when I have to send the check.
we're gonna need cash out of you, Bob.
Yeah, unmarked bills, of course.
Well, I've got them drying in the shower. So as soon as they're done, what denomination would you like?
All right, $100.
$20 bills, and still better than a check.
Nah, you guys are great. Nah, such a joy to talk.
I really enjoyed it, and you know,
made my night.
Yeah. Likewise, ours too. Thank you, guys.
Thank you a lot. It was a bunch
good
of
night.
Fun.
Good night, guys.
Take care of my friends.
Okay.
Later.
Alrighty. Thanks for listening to the PA Podcast. We thank Aaron and Bob for the fun, real talk. And of course, Jenny Coe and Brian Kilpatrick. PAPodcast.com, on iTunes and Stitcher. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the cookie jar. Make someone laugh daily. Enjoy.